It's the Tiltcast, episode 688. We're back.
And this week, guys, we're talking Slay the Spire 2, Pragmata, Diablo 4, Crimson Desert, and Recoin. Stay tuned.
And we're back.
It's been a minute.
Oh, it has.
It really has been a minute. It's the Tiltcast. It's an M-rated show. I'm Nas.
I'm Jason.
I'm Rusty.
The three of us are going to get a very, very relaxed show today. We've been gone. I haven't had the... I just get this out of the way and we can talk about more fun stuff. I've had a lot of, like, crap go on. Like, bullshit, honestly. Within a week... Then a few days of recording, getting ready to record the episode that would have been next, my cousin passed away. And then not even exactly a full week later, one of my gaming buddies passed. Just out of the blue, completely unexpected. I took time off work from home, haven't been in the best headspace. Didn't really feel like recording, just going to say that. Would not have been that entertaining. So, apologize for leaving. And then holding these two guys up because I have the majority of the recording stuff. But it is what it is. Life gets in the way. I've been doing this a long time. There's plenty of episodes to go back on. That being said,
it just all kind of lined up one after the other.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah. Chris, Jason hadn't met. At least you did one gaming session with him, right?
No, Chris, like four.
Was it four? Oh, yeah, because you've been doing the biannual game for a while. Yeah. Won't comment on here all that was, though. I'll talk about it offline with you, Jason. But the, that was super unexpected. Now, granted, Chris is older than the rest of us. I'm in my early 40s, and so is Jason, and so is everybody but one of our guys. But Chris was 52, but he passed of an unexpected heart attack just out of the blue. This is a guy that has lost a lot of weight, too. So I'd say, Rusty, him and you had similar builds. And he lost 250 pounds.
Yeah.
And then just a few years later, just out of the blue, I don't know if he just wasn't eating right or what, but, like, just massive heart attack. But his...
It's unfortunately one of those things that happens when you lose a bunch of weight real quick. Your body's been stressed for so long, it's shakes loose. It's weird. Like, people who have, rapid weight loss or even, like, substantial weight loss, they think they're out of the water and are, out of the danger zone for heart issues and stuff. And for the most part, it helps. But if there was an underlying issue, there, it's not going to go away. So that was one of the things the doctor told me is, like, you have hypertension and have had hypertension for a long time, that damage don't go away. So, it's just a thing that sucks. I mean, it really does. It's something that I have to keep track of myself, just to be sure that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing,
Right. Yeah, still got to take care of your heart health after that.
Yes.
Which, that's a process. But outside of that, I have a wonderful girlfriend who is going to keep me pretty fucking distracted, honestly. I've been doing some things. I took off from photography this month. It is still April for a little bit longer. Although I did a little bit of landscapes that I still got to produce. And I've got some stuff lined up for next month. But that being said, see, I saw, if you can tell by the hat, saw Death Clock last week. Not even last week, Monday. That's how crazy this month has been flying along. Death Clock is amazing live. If you like that kind of stuff, it is fun to see Brennan Small do the voices. They've done music videos for basically every song, right? And so they play those behind the band while they play, and they're just silhouettes. So you don't actually see anybody. You just see the silhouettes of the people playing and then the music video behind them. But they're ridiculously tight. And then Brendan Small does some of the voices here and there. Like, all of them, except for Murderface for some reason. There's little joke bits that they pre-record in between a lot of songs. They play a pretty long set. And then I saw Monomarth right before them. If you don't know who that is a Viking metal band that has inflatables that don't look like inflatables on the stage. So there is, like, the drum riser is a huge skull with Viking horns. It's probably, like, 60 feet wide. They had these giant, like, statues of Vikings on either side. The inflatables go up, like, in seconds. They had Jormungandr, like, the sea serpent, like, attacking everybody. Main vocalist had a big hammer that he was hitting a giant inflatable snake with the entire time. Super fun. They have the row pit. I don't know if you know what that is, but instead of a mosh pit, everybody starts rowing. So everybody gets down and, like, pretends they're rowing. And there was, like, 2,000 people doing the row pit to a Monomarth, which was pretty amazing.
That's hilarious.
They're pretty freaking tight live, too. Got a little beanie that has, like, Viking horns on it. It's amazing. And then I saw Castle Rat, which Castle Rat is, like... So, no other real way to say this. So, like, they're kind of, like, really... They're a really, really just trendy, dorky band, right? So it's... Everybody... It looks like 80s heavy metal on stage, right? So there's this girl that's dressed in almost nothing, right, with big 80s hair. Singing to basically Black Sabbath behind her, right? So it's, like, really bass-heavy Black Sabbath music. And she's got, like, a sword and, like, all sorts of stuff. And everybody's dressed in medieval garb. There's people fighting on stage with a vocalist, and they have, like, well, there was, like, a giant rat at one point that she was fighting. There's these girls on stage that were dressed in, like, weird demonic head suits, but, like, were wearing basically nothing besides that. So it is that kind of show. That's what they opened with. So everything thematically fit pretty well. But, yeah, if you can catch that on tour, they're still on tour another month. That was a really fun show. And then I was out, this is just aside from video games, I was out in the middle of nowhere. It's called Alabaster Caverns, which is a natural park. My girlfriend decided we were going to go camping. That would help me clear my head. So we did. We went out in the middle of nowhere and went through a cave tour and then camped out in the desert. And it was, we were expecting a cold front, but I didn't realize how bad it was going to be for camping. We got, so A, you know, the wilderness survival people can laugh, but I was a Boy Scout at one point. I've already paid my dues. I got an inflatable tent because I didn't want to mess with it. We blow it up. It's like 2 minutes flat. You got it set up. It's done. It's pretty big. I can fit a queen size air mattress in there, which I did, complete with like a comforter and blankets and sleeping bags and all sorts of stuff. I think I had like 5 blankets. And I brought a bunch of hot hands with me. And the idea was to take pictures of the Milky Way because it's a Bortle 2 level sky, meaning it's the second darkest sky you can get. And did we ever see stars? But Milky Way comes out about 1 in the morning. We're going to stay up till then. And it was really cold, so we're sitting out in front of our tent. Like, she bought some high-powered binoculars. And it looks like a planetarium. Like, it's ridiculous. But... we decided it was cold, and we sat in the tent for a minute, and before long, like, we're snoozing, and I wake up, and we're both just shivering like crazy. Like, the cold woke me up, and she had the idea of taking all the hot hands and opening them up and stuffing them under the blankets and under the pillows and, like, everywhere to try to get us some warmth, and, of course, that did work, but it was too cold to go out. Like, I was wearing thermals, long socks, coat. Like, it was basically freezing, and we're trying to sleep in freezing weather, right? It was 33 degrees. I think it was 1 degree above freezing. It was cold and a little bit windy on top of that. So we're trying to sleep in that. We had went out looking before for a good spot to see the Milky Way, and we got pretty far out away from the campsite was. But there's a big break of trees that were in the way. We go down there. We had to walk through about 200 yards of tall grass. And we kept hearing something large move in the grass. I heard noises. Of course, Rusty, you're like, it's probably a raccoon. You might be right. But it's pitch black. Like, it's pitch black, and you got red flashlights, so it looks like Silent Hill out there. Like, how much reaction time do you have? And we'd been watching, like, mountain lion videos the day before of, like, how mountain lions attack. And a mountain lion's, like, jump and then bite your neck. And there's several documented cases. It's not that they're actively hunting humans, but if you go into their territory, if you come across them and they got kittens, right, like, it doesn't matter. They don't want to eat you. They still want to hurt you or kill you. So, and they attack really fast. And that was kind of our, like, you know, that was the danger of being out there in the middle of nowhere. So we kept wondering, like, is this a mountain lion or what's going on? You know, so we went back, probably raccoon. But you would, even with the really bright red flashlights, you'd have, like, almost no reaction time.
Yeah. Yeah. Your mind does weird tricks in the dark. So you're, yeah. I could have swore there's plenty of times up here walking in the dark. I could have swore that I was being, you know, stalked by something. And it's, you know, very likely that it was just a raccoon or a possum or something, you know, something stupid.
Yeah, right? Something like, pretty unintimidating.
Right.
Like, for a raccoon to bite you, you'd have to be, like, holding it.
I mean, most of the time, yeah, a raccoon's not going to...
They're not going to attack you.
Near you.
They're going to run away. Same with the possum.
What I was experiencing, it sounded like it was, like, right behind me or was following me. But, again, if you're walking down a road or something like that, and the sound is bouncing off of, like, a hill or some shit, that still messes with your brain, too, because you don't know exactly where the sound is coming from. So, it's... Yeah. But it's an experience. You don't forget that shit, right?
So, no, and... The cool thing about that is, like, it's a part of Oklahoma where it transitions from green country to desert. And so the whole landscape is dotted with gullies. So you're high up, but it's just like there's huge holes in the earth, right? You're even, and then there's a big trench, like little small valleys all over the place, which is a different landscape than I'm used to. And then there's these trails behind where we're at, and they were narrow, like billy goat trails almost. Right. And then the drop off to your left where we were at is like 150 feet, like just sheer drop. And it's a gravel trail. Right. So we went exploring during the day looking at that stuff. And I haven't done a whole lot of landscapes, and I think I learned something really new with that I need to work on to get that perspective. I need to stitch together more photos. I don't know if I sent you guys the photo, but like, went to something else called Gloss Mountain State Park, which is a big mesa that you can climb up on top of. And most of the pictures I have don't really capture the sense of scale or height real well. And I think it's because they're too narrow field of view. Like, they're pretty landscapes, but, like, didn't capture the feeling I had. And the only one that I got that I really liked was one where I stitched together a panorama, which I haven't really tried that before, but I took 5 pictures on a wide-angle lens. It's a very, like, I could print it across, like, a 10-foot wall. And that captures, like, the sense of, like, height and scale and everything else. Like, I was trying to figure out, like, what do I do to... Because it was dangerous, right? We're on top of this mesa that's not that wide. Like, maybe, I don't know, 100, 200 yards wide in spots and maybe 50 feet wide in other spots. That's a few hundred feet above a valley, right? So you look out, there's a drop, and it's just like... Like a cartoon, right? You just look over the edge. We're walking up there, and there's turkey vultures, like, on the side of the cliff as you're going up. And they're, like, flying away. But we're where birds are at, right? We see the birds flying up to the path from where we're at. Those are pretty big birds.
Yeah.
You know, and there's warnings for rattlesnakes and all sorts of stuff all over the place, which is funny because there is, don't know how, like, it's one of the most treacherous state park paths I've ever been on. So you go up these, like, stairs for a big portion of it, but some of the stairs are uneven and at an angle, like, in an ingress like this, right? So, like, say 35 degrees ingress when you're stepping on it. So you're, like, leaning into the mountain, and that's, like, 100 feet of it is those. And then the last, I don't know, 50, 100 feet, there is these huge rocks that are too big, really, unless you're tall. So at my height and higher, you can take a high step to get on each rock, and there's a railing. But that's it. You're climbing up, like, almost straight up like that to get up top. And so we're up there, and then, like, after a while, some dad and his kids, like, coming up on the path behind us. It's like, how do these kids even get up? Do you just throw them up the top? The funniest quote of that day was just hearing this guy go, you know what? I don't want you wandering off the path. You get bit by a rattlesnake, it's going to ruin the whole trip. And I was like, what?
Yeah, it will. That's an accurate statement.
It's not a bad dad statement.
But it was just like pure dad energy, because these kids were like, you know, under 10. It'd be like, you know, your kid, Jason. You would also have to watch from going off the path constantly. He had a kid like that. It was just kind of like basically in orbit around the dad the entire time. Just yeah, that was pretty therapeutic. I mean, I've played video games. We'll talk about that later. But what have you guys been up to?
Well, it's not been gaming. Unfortunately, I mean, well, granted, all of your stuff's been much, much heavier, but basically the weekend you found out your cousin passed away, my washer started making weird noises. So that Sunday I spent the entire day trying to diagnose the damn thing. Figure out it's got to be either the bearings on the wash tub, because it's a front load washer, so it's got multiple bearings on the wash tub. So let's spin around the drive shaft, or it had to be the support arm that holds the grated tub inside the bigger tub. So wait till the next weekend. Spend the entire weekend trying to tear the damn thing down. It was 8 p.m. on a Saturday when I finally got the tub assembly out of the damn dryer, because I'm trying to do it all in our tiny ass little laundry room.
So you're cramped.
So I'm cramped.
There's not a lot of space in there, I can tell you.
I'm fighting every screw. Like the entire room is 4 feet wide. Maybe 4.5. So working in a cramped workspace, finally get it out. And then proceed to spend all Sunday struggling to get the drive shaft out of the damn thing and get the grated tub out of the big wash tub. And come to find out, it was all because one of the bearings, the water seal for the inner bearing, had failed. So the whole thing had rusted apart, and the entire thing had exploded, and half of it was fulcrumed against the drive shaft at an angle. And just holding it in. It ended up taking me 20 minutes with a 50-pound sledgehammer to get that drive shaft out of there.
Damn!
Either way, I'm so fixated with trying to get to these bearings that I don't even realize that the thing had been rocking so bad that the drive wheel on the back that connects it to the motor had cut into the back of the wash tub all the way through, like three lines about an inch long, completely through the plastic tub. So it was no longer watertight and no longer good.
Yeesh.
So that was last week. So this week, Crystal finds the same washer we've got. Somebody says doesn't work. on Facebook for like $50. You know, you have them open the back panel and see, you know, try to see if it's got same type of damage as yours, whatever. It doesn't. You know, drive out there Wednesday evening, pick that up, get it back to the house, unload it. By the time we've unloaded, it's like 9 o'clock, and I'm like, I'm not doing this tonight. So proceed to Friday. Work on pulling that one apart because it rained here Thursday, so I didn't touch it Thursday because all that was out on my front porch. Friday, tear that one apart. Yesterday, spend all day putting the washer back together. And thank God it fucking worked. Finally put the laundry room back together today, right before we started recording. I literally finished hooking the dryer up to everything before I came in here. So I have not... All of me has been completely absorbed by looking at parts, trying to game plan stuff, plus the fact that the wife is also trying to start vegetable gardens in our backyard because, you know, world situations. So I've been dealing with a whole lot of gardening stuff, too. It's been awesome.
You two, huh?
Yeah, you two are just turning into, like, real-life survival game.
Well, I mean...
We don't have chickens yet, so...
That's the last hurdle, right? You get chickens so that you have eggs and meat. You have to have a lot of chickens, though, right? Because they got to grow up.
Chickens, like, end up snowballing into you, like, getting something else.
I don't think so. Like a lot of people have gotten chickens. Or
goats.
When the eggs were, when bird flu was, you know, causing the eggs to, you know, go up to like $5 a dozen or something like that, there was a lot of people that just got chicken. Well, those people who did get into that, they already have the chicken coops. They already basically, you know, sunk cost on that. Sure, the cost of eggs has gone down, but the chances of, you know, egg prices going back up again is just one flew away, right? So
they're set for life for chickens as long as they, you know, complete the cycle.
The thing is like up here, you can go to you know the farm, you know, farm and feed stores up here, and you can get your chicks for cheap, like super cheap. You can come home with a whole box full of chicks, and, you know, raise those chickens throughout, you know, throughout the, you know, the season, and then have them all slaughtered, throw them in the freezer for the, you know, for winter meat, and do it all over again in the spring. Or you could just have, you could have egg layers, that you keep, you have like a dozen, slaughter chickens, right? So, you know, these are going to be your hanger chickens that you can throw in the freezer and roast. And then you've got six to a dozen, you know, egg layers that you keep, and, you know, you can keep those through the winter. You just, up here, you have to heat the coops. The only reason I know this is because my neighbor did it. And I get to wake up to that every morning. I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet. In fact,
you're not quite there yet.
My landlord said something about not having birds, so I think that includes chickens.
You think that includes fowl?
It's okay. I don't need to be
in the urban park. Technically, they're not kept in the house.
You're right. You're right.
I would think that would be his main problem with it.
There's a couple sheds out there I'm not using. I could easily turn one of them into a coop. I get it, but that's not what I'm going to do. I don't need to be an urban farmer. And I don't go through enough eggs. Like, well, I guess I don't know. I could go through more eggs. I just haven't because I got myself out of the habit of using eggs when they were stupid expensive, right? So, yeah, it's a thing. I'm going to go in a completely different direction. Like, you know, I'm not doing that, but I am going to try to put things into ground with the intention of getting something back out of it.
Well, I mean, you know, growing food is definitely a thing. You just gotta be smart about what you're gonna grow.
So I know what I'm going to end up doing, and I'm gonna start with some container stuff first. I have flower beds out front. I told myself I was going to dig up the flower beds, put new soil down, and actually plant, nice looking perennials in there. And then I'll put, you know, have space to throw annuals in between them so that, you know, you can have spring color and whatnot, you know. Do stuff with it, but the landlord said, I hate flower boxes. The previous tenants didn't do anything with them. You know, by all means, throw some color out front. It looks good, right? Like, okay. But my front entryway is basically like a little greenhouse, and I don't use the front door or front entryway. Big window. It's lots of sun. It's a perfect spot to have an herb garden, like a window herb garden. So I'm going to build up a window herb garden, and I'm going to have a bunch of herbs like, you know, thyme and rosemary and a bunch of other stuff in there. And I'm going to do that. And then I'm going to focus on, I'm not going to do potatoes because I don't see a benefit to, you know, growing my own potatoes. They're dirt cheap, like literally dirt cheap. But green onions, your normal like yellow onions or red onions, garlic. Those are things that I'm looking at possibly doing. Garlic is you plant it in the fall, let it winter, and then it comes up, in the spring, and, you dry it out, and that lasts the entire, entire winter. You get a butt ton of garlic out of that. Green onions, you literally go to the store and buy green onions, cut the whites off the bottom of them. The side that has, you keep the root, cut about an inch and a half of the white off, plant that in in soil, water it, and in a week, you've got new green onions. So you'll never have to buy green onions again. It's good. That's the kind of thing that that I would be doing. So I would just like have that on rotation. So I'm going to start simple. I know, I know your wife and how she how she was doing things, when I was there. It makes sense. I have never grown anything successfully, so this is about a $150 experiment.
This is tomatoes, okra, strawberry, lemongrass. sort of lettuce.
Yeah, and I thought about cabbage and Brussels sprout because those two things actually grow up here rather well. And I've gotten to really like cabbage and Brussels sprouts. So I thought about it, but also cabbage is relatively inexpensive, and I don't do Brussels sprouts nearly enough to actually like want to care for them in the ground, you know?
So, yeah, it's like maybe a once a week thing,
right? So it's things like, I know if I grow garlic, I'm going to be using garlic. I know I will use garlic, right? And if I grow onions are used in just about every dish that I cook. So I know I'm going to go through the onions, right? If I burl that, bag them and keep them in a cool, dry, dark place, they're going to last all winter, you know? These are things that I know I will use a large amount of. And then if I'm successful this year, I will go and do tomatoes and peppers next year. And that, and then throw cilantro in the herb garden, and I've got everything I need for salsa. So this is building up to having summer salsa, you know?
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to have the garlic until, I have it over winter, and a bunch of other stuff that needs to happen this year for it to be successful next year. But yeah, I'm sticking my thumb up a green spot. I don't know. I'm hoping that it doesn't turn brown. I think maybe I might end up being a little. At least do something with it.
You know what they say, if you find you don't have a green thumb, just go stick your thumb in someone who does.
Oh boy. That was not a statement that was safe to have a drink through.
You're welcome. It's a lesson I learned a long time ago.
I about died just then. Thanks. Wow. Wise words. Wise words indeed.
All that aside.
Yeah.
Do you want to take a quick break and then maybe jump into some games and what we've been up to?
Sure.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, we'll be back. We're back. Needed a quick break. We had to game plan. It's a non-standard episode. Actually, this is more of a standard episode. We've been doing a long time, honestly. We did play video games.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, those two did.
It, mostly me and Rusty. Maybe Rusty, we can go back and forth on what we've been up to. Maybe. I'll pick a game, possibly. You pick a game, comment. I got a... been playing a never-ending spree of Slay the Spire. Has turned into... You can play it co-op via the internet, but you can also take turns on nodes, which is what me and my gal have been doing, which actually works quite well. Like, we've been building strategies. We're on Ascension 4 with the Silent, and Ascension 3 with the Necromancer girl, whatever. Recently, I don't know that it got review bombed, but a lot of people got upset. So the rating, you can go look, dropped significantly over a patch change, and I can tell you why. The game's still really good. What's not really good is there is a really difficult boss at the end of Act 3 that basically just continues to get rid of your cards. We don't know how to beat it, and it takes a while to get to the boss. You can save at any point, right? But let's say we've got a good run. I'd go for an hour and a half, right? And you get to this boss that is, like, seemingly unbeatable. Because for, like, a solid two turns, every card you play goes away. And, like, the optimal way to play a deck or to build a deck is to not have too many cards so that you're always getting good cards, right? You don't have filler. So sometimes you remove cards, you know, And if he exhausts or essentially gets rid of every card you play for those two turns, you either just sit there and get punished like crazy, or you just lose because you're out of cards. Like, we've encountered this boss twice. It goes through three phases. And both times we got to him, we're just out of cards, like, inside of 5 minutes, basically. And you just, we can't figure out a way around it.
So, yeah, I'm looking at the Steam reviews, and there's a lot more stuff that you can do with Steam reviews now, just to kind of get an idea of, like, where things are coming from. And outside of just, like, looking at the thumbs down review, right? One of the things that you can do is you can actually find out what language is being used to and how many reviews in that language is causing the reviews to go down, like with the score, because it's currently mixed as, you know, for the recent reviews. I will tell you that it's very positive in English with 50,000 reviews.
It's Chinese.
But it's mostly negative with simplified Chinese at 72,000 reviews. So, and traditional Chinese with 2,250 reviews as mixed. Everything else is relatively positive. So, the posts that are really causing it to come down are all written in simplified Chinese. So take that how you will, but if it was a review bomb, which it very well could be, that's where it's coming from. And that's the language it's written in. So I don't read simplified Chinese, so I can't really tell you what's going on here, but I could probably, like, Google Translate it, I guess. Let me try one. Translate this. Usually, I can't be bothered to leave reviews. I don't even mind when cards get nerfed, but this latest update is absolutely ridiculous. Was the gatekeeper boss actually designed by a human being? Turn 1, infinite HP, you can't deal any damage. Turn 2, it burns your cards. Turn 3, you can't draw any cards. Turn 4, playing a card costs you 1 energy. On top of all that, it hits you for 20 to 30 damage every single turn. Did the designers even manage to beat this themselves?
Yeah, I don't know how to do it.
So, that's a legit review in my eyes.
Yeah, it's that boss is tuned ridiculous.
So, that was just the very top review that I saw that was negative. So
even more ridiculous than that one on, what is it, level 2 or 3 that sits on, like, that big throne and spawns, like, 3 fucking soldiers in front of him every
minute. Oh, so you've been playing a little bit of
minutes in one.
Yeah, they have something. They have a lot of spawn bosses. You really, Jason, you should pick this up. Yeah, there's one boss that, like, buffs the shit out of his minion. And that minion, like, that gets to a point where there are certain cards you just can't play. Because skill cards or whatever, it's pretty hard. But we finally managed to figure out how to beat it. It, like, in its current state, like, me and my girlfriend are just kind of waiting on additional progression, but we still have a lot of fun doing the runs. So, like, it's a pretty easy activity to just sit there and pass controller back and forth and play Slay the Spire. Like, it's a good game. That boss, though, is bullshit.
What kind of shitty update is this? With the boss mechanics changed like this, are undead players even supposed to be able to play anymore?
Yeah, we like
playing. I'm having fun, like, translating Chinese now, so.
Yeah, I like playing the Necrobinder. We've put a lot of time into that. I think I've actually already put over 100 hours. Like, me and her have played this almost every night now since it's been out. I showed her. I was like, you might like this game. This just turned into the game. Like, it's good, except for that boss. And, yes, their bosses are different between different classes that you play?
I'm actually, sitting here mind boggled by just how much information is able to be typed in such a small space with simplified Chinese. Because I'm getting full paragraphs off of what looks like one sentence. And I know that I know there's a lot more meaning, like each one of those symbols means a word or like is a portion of a word. Like sometimes there's like compound, but languages are actually quite fascinating to the point where it bakes my noodle sometimes. Let's see, not recommended. I have no idea where the designers were thinking when they devised the game mechanics. In multiplayer co-op, how exactly are you supposed to play a full skill deck when you run into the experiment boss on tier 3? I'm here to play the game, not let the game play me. Okay. So a lot of people, the Chinese reviews are basically, shitting on the third boss, which is what she said. So maybe, it's review bombed in China, but they have a point. Oh man.
But also, is it really that much different than the first game? And keeping in mind that the game is still in early access,
there's always going to be like an overtuned boss at some point. Like, there's something that
they're going to have to redo a lot of the design on that. Like, it was already hard before, and now it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely hard bosses with the other characters that I've felt like I've figured out and mastered. This boss is just stupid. Especially, like, when you're talking about, so, like, when you can't select new cards, so there's a card that you can get to generate more card draw. So, like, one of the builds with the Necrobinder is to play something called a Soul. And there's a couple of mechanics that help. So, A, there's a card that, a skill, if you play the card called Haunt, that every time you play Soul, it does X amount of damage, right? And depending on how you put that card upgraded or buff stacked, it does, like, had it doing as much as, like, 16 damage at one point per draw. But you get a Soul card, and it lets you pick two more cards, and it has zero cost. So you can use that to continue to draw cards until you get the cards you want to play. So when you get to a point where you can't draw cards, it, like, nullifies that build altogether.
Damn. Yeah. That would
be nice.
And that boss is specific to that character. And that is one of the builds. So, like, if you're doing a draw build, like, it's impossible, it feels like.
So there really needs to be some way for...
I can only think of maybe one build that could get through it. So there's a, to not take damage, you got to block. But in the case of the Necrobinder, you have a skeleton hand, right, that you can buff up to take damage like a pet. So it can take damage for you, and you can you building up its health carries over between rounds. So if you couldn't play any cards, like, technically you could have that skeleton guy built up so high that that he can just take damage. But it's that boss does lots of damage, right? Like, I've never been in a point where I had the skeleton hand at, like, 100 health, right? Like, I've had it as high as, like, 60 health, but not something crazy like 100 or 200 health. To absorb multiple hits of, like, 20 and 30. Like, there's just no way.
Is it possible? Because I know that there's, there's cards that you unlock as you play through, just like any roguelike, So, though, you're going to have failed runs until you unlock the right cards, and then you'll get a power boost from those cards. Is there possibly something like that?
I have all the current unlocks right now because I've beat the game with all characters. So the only thing left are just challenges, which is what we're doing right now.
Well, that
you know, challenges that don't give you anything permanent bonus other than make the game harder if you beat it.
Oh, nice. Okay, so it's just...
At this point, we're just waiting for new content to unlock.
Okay, well...
I've got over 100 hours in that game. Like, we're pretty well rounded on it.
Yeah.
101 hours in record.
I'll get to it eventually, but there's other stuff I've been playing.
So we talked about Slay the Spire 2. What's you been playing?
So, since we last talked, I played through the vast majority of Diablo 4's last season, right? The season of Slaughter, where you run around as the Butcher. And that's, that season was, it's short, and ending really, really soon. In fact, the new expansion for Diablo 4 is coming out in a couple of days. And that is following the Lord of Hatred story arc, finishing the story arc basically that started in Diablo 4. That adds a whole new section of the map. It officially adds the Paladin, though you can kind of play the Paladin right now if you pre-order. It adds a Warlock class, which looks really freaking neat. And that Warlock class allows you to, like, use shadow magic, or you can just, like, take over demons. Like, hey, there's this demon that's attacking me. I'm going to take it over, and it is now my pet. You can, like, conjure different things up, and it's a dual resource thing. So you've got, like, a demon resource and a shadow resource, and you kind of have to balance those two things to cast your spells and stuff. But one of the biggest things that they're doing is they are completely changing how the skill tree works. Since Diablo 4's launch, it's always been like this really straightforward passive tree, and then this really complex paragon tree that you do after you've gotten through all of your your base levels, and it just gives you like passive upgrades and shit. What they're doing is they're putting all of the passives on the armor sets now.
Interesting.
And they're going to be putting all of, your active abilities and, like variations on your active abilities in the skill tree. So that basically how you're building your characters and have built your characters from the time that the game had released is going to change completely. So all builds are getting shook up. All of the character classes are going to play differently because of how that's being shook up. The leveling system is there, but the difficulty system, there was only four tiers of difficulty. Torment 4 was the top tier. They're adding seven more. So it's, you'll have much more range to work with your difficulty levels so that you kind of move up in the ranks and not like just, hit the top and get bored, which is what happens right now. And it's meant to just completely shake up how this game is played. It's a really ambitious goal because making big changes this far out from release is like nutty. It's like having a whole new game. They'll be adding armor sets back into the game again. So, like, set pieces, like the green quality set pieces, those are coming back. Then that will be, will make it so that there's, possibilities for new sets of armor, that tie into how you play certain classes, adds more build content. Is really, really what they need. The Roger Cube is coming in again, which was a fan favorite from the previous Diablo titles, and that gives you the ability to basically kind of self gamble on stuff or build things, specific to what you're looking for. So it's promising to be a really big expansion. And that's something that I'm interested in seeing, because I played through all of the previous season to the point of boredom, that gives me a baseline so that I can kind of compare the two. I really do want to play a little around Warlock a little bit. Looks like it might be a little broken, but there's also Spiritborn was pretty broken too, and basically everything in that game. There's at least one build that is just totally stupid, unless you're a rogue. that's one of the games that I'll be playing here and have been playing over the past month and a half. That's a big time sink, and I'll be planning on talking more about that expansion soon. But there's been another time sink, and I think we both played it.
Yeah, did you play some Crimson Desert?
I did. Oh boy, did I.
I'm chipping away at that, but it's a pretty massive game. Have you gotten quite a bit of progress in that so far?
I'm progressed enough to basically have my first big camp upgrade. I'm gonna step back. Crimson Desert. It's got like a really mixed love-hate relationship in the gaming space right now, because went into it.
I think just the internet.
Yeah, well, yeah, true, it's the internet. But people who went into this game thinking that it was going to be an RPG on the level of, like, Skyrim or even, like, a Final Fantasy title or anything like that are going to be completely disappointed. Because this game does not hold your hand, nor does it give you much of a story to work with. And it is actually quite dry if you're looking at it from a story perspective. It's like really dry. But that's not where what they were focusing on. I think they were adding the story elements after they built the systems. That's what it feels like. Like, they could have made that game with no speaking roles whatsoever, and like they all spoke Simlish, and the game would still be interesting to me. And the reason for that is that game really just has a presence in discovery. Mm-hmm. It is old school in that way, where you are just go out and see something interesting in the distance, and that's your goal. You go to that thing that you see in the distance. And the fact that you can see that thing in the distance from really far away is telling. Because
right.
That's not something that you see in every game. There's draw distances for a reason, right? This gives you far off things that you can see decent detail of and make that your goal. And
That's where the fun is. Things that emerge from, you know, from just going from point A to point B is the game. All of the other stuff is objectives or activities that you can do in that game, and the story is the fishnet that's thrown over top of it just to kind of like collect it all together into something that they could call a game.
It's Discover the game. It's kind of third person Skyrim, to be honest with you.
It kind of is. And one of the things that I actually kind of love and hate about this game is the combat. I love how it kind of feels like a mix between it is a mix between certain like hack and slash games like Enshrouded, right? You know, because you're using swords and spears and, you know, and different weapon types to do that. But it's also kind of Arkham-y in a way, because you don't really have to hit a specific button to, you don't have to continually mash the button. In fact, the game kind of doesn't tell you this, but you don't have to button mash at all. You just kind of do button combinations like your, you know, X and Y and your, your bumpers and your triggers, and you can kind of like, you know, go from one move into another move, and it's very fluid if you do it that way. And the auto targeting for those things is relatively smart. As long as you are moving towards an enemy, it's probably going to connect. And that gives you a kind of combat that you can enjoy, because you're not doing, you're doing really cool moves, but you can also kind of watch your character do those moves and not have to worry about like the inputs as much, right? Kind of know what your fingers need to do, and as soon as you kind of turn your brain off to that and you just do those moves, you can just watch your character just kick ass, which is really fun. The part that I hate about it is that it's kind of few and far between. Like, there's a lot of running in this game. You know, going from point A to point B is a joy because the game is beautiful, but if you're in it for like nonstop combat, like, you're not getting Kazan style combat, right? You're not going to have, your really tough enemies for, around every corner. There's small packs of enemies, and you can kind of dispatch them in really quick, really quick moves, especially in the first area. So if you go into it just looking for combat, you're going to be disappointed as well. So there's a lot of people that are disappointed in this game because I was looking for combat. I was looking for story. I was looking for something that was epic and had structure, or something that was on rails. Those are not this game.
No.
This game is like, it's unique in that way, and as long as you can approach it on its level, you get a lot more out of it than you think you would.
It's a good podcast game.
It is a good podcast game, and I find myself like booting it up and like, okay, yeah, there's a couple quests that require me to go all the way over here and then bring a thing all the way back. And part of the, part of the appeal is trying to figure out how to get there, how to get back, and not get sidetracked and shit, because Ooh Shiny happens a lot in that game. sometimes it's just like, okay, I'm going to do one or two quests, you know, tonight, and I'm going to call it good, because I know that that one of the two quests is going to take me an hour, hour and a half or so, and it's definitely worth, you know, just making that plan and going with it. I was looking at what I needed to upgrade the, you know, the camp so I could get more people in the camp. And you end up kind of base building in a way. And that base building gives you activities that you can do that is not just running around the map, you know, and fighting enemies, but like farming and, you know, and like building up your clan of people and stuff like that, you know, with abilities that they can do. It's system upon system upon system, and it can get quite overwhelming, but take one system at a time and drop the ones that you don't like. Like, I hate horse racing, so I don't do it. You know, it's, but horse racing is in the game. You can kind of raise your horses to be better horses. You can train them to do other things, or you could just be like, yeah, this horse is good enough. and just move on with your day. So you really don't need to do a lot. You can kind of miss 90% of the game if you just follow the story. Because
yeah,
there's so much to do that is not on the beaten path. So it's going to be an interesting conversation, because there's a lot of people that are like, this is the best game that's, you know, that's come out this year. And there's a lot of people that's like, I'm super disappointed in how this, you know, how this worked out. One thing I can tell you, developers are on top of it. Like, quality of life upgrades have been, you know, put out pretty quickly. And some of the stuff that they've done, just in the last few updates, has kind of changed the game. You know, it's just the latest update. You can now name your pets, which you didn't have the ability to name your pets in, you know, in the game. Now you can. And you can tame birds. Yes, please. You know? So there's a bunch of stuff. It's just like, I wish they were, you know, they were looking at the at forums, and then people were like, yeah, I wish I could name my dog after my dog at home, or and it would be really cool to have like a falcon or something like that. And they're, okay, we can do that. And they just code that shit into the game over the course of like a couple weeks. That's amazing.
It is amazing.
You know, so it's hard to it's hard to, you know, to shit on a, you know, a developer that is that reactive to, you know, to a suggestion and be like, you know, that sounds cool, let's do it. I mean, the last developer that, you know, that was even really close to that was it took them longer, but Hello Games made changes to their, you know, to their game to improve it over time, and none of these things really cost any money. You know, the stuff that they've put in there, that, you know, hasn't cost money, and arguably has added stuff to the game that could have cost, you know, could have been DLC, you know, for other developers. So good on them for not, you know, grabbing at money, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, if they continue going, you know, with the way that they're going right now, it's totally worth, you know, picking this game up, and you can slow play this game.
And that's kind of where I'm at. I'm like chapter 5, but I'm just like in a discovery mode. Like, there's so many little things to do. You feel like you're missing too much when you start hauling ass to the story.
Right. But there's a balance, though, because as you go along in the story,
You unlock stuff.
Things. It unlocks things that make sense for discovery. Like, you know, there is, it's fairly well known that at a point you gain the ability to kind of glide in that game, but you don't really, you know, you don't get that until you go through a good portion of the story. You could get sidetracked and just not get that ability for far too long and wonder why you never had that ability, you know, 20 hours into the game when you see people gliding around the map. Well, you know, after a couple hours, you realize you have to do, you know, a little bit of the story to do, you know, to get that. So
yeah.
I went through enough of the story to the point where it's like, okay, the story wants me to go to a completely different area. That's when I know that it's pretty safe for me to just stop the main story and explore the area that you start in and spend whatever time I want in there before I move on to the next area. And that's kind of how I've been, like figuring out when I should move on or when I should, you know, put more emphasis on discovery, you know, and going out and doing stuff. But I'm enjoying the hell out of this game. Like, it's worth every bit of pennies I threw together to get that, get this. Very impressed with how optimized it is. And they have made changes to how it looks. And that is, it's been getting even better as, you know, over the patch. So, it's nuts. Just absolutely crazy. Like, it blows me away sometimes. I will stop, at the edge of a river. Just, you know, stop doing what I was doing and stare at the water, because the water physics in this game is beautiful. Like, you can sit there and watch a mountain stream and it's serene. It's quiet. There isn't like epic music going on. It's all very like atmospheric, and you can chill playing this game. You can just like zone out and, you know, walk at a very slow pace through this area and just like take in the scenery. It's really cool for them. Sometimes you just need that reset, especially me. Like, it's been so friggin' snowy and shitty out here. It's just now starting to become spring in my area, so green is actually happening for the first time in months. I needed something that I could just like lose myself in, and this was it. So, I don't know. I've spoke a lot about it. How do you feel about this game?
Well, I will tell you that I did try something new.
Okay.
I'll have two quick games to talk about. I'll talk about the first one because it is pretty quick. Has anybody here heard of Pragmata?
Yes, that's the kind of like a Dead Space style big dude character with the little girl on his back.
Yeah, I won't go too much into the premise, but basically she's an android and your guy. It's the latest game to be like, I'm going to be a space dad game. But I don't mind that space so much. So the android, the interaction between you and the android is like a father-daughter kind of thing. It's actually quite precious. But she's an android and she can hack for you. So what I recommend before you don't, the internet is full of dumb people. The internet has got a controversy going on about this game. Don't worry about that because it's dumb. But what you should do is they've got a demo for it that you can try. If you like the demo, you'll like the rest of the game. I've put, I don't know, like 3 hours into it. I just got it because it just came out. And the way the gameplay works is it's a puzzle/story/action game you're in a Dead Space thing, not as scary as Dead Space, but kind of similar, right? Like, you've got killer android robots all over the place. And the android kid that, like, kind of stands on your back like it's a backpack, or like they're riding a chariot or something. I don't know. It's just the way your backpack's laid out. The android kid can stand in there and, like, reach over your shoulder. And what she's doing is she's hacking for you. What hacking means is you've got a little mini game in combat. Combat's really weighty, kind of like Dead Space, because if you think about Dead Space in a way, it's almost like a puzzle shooter, right? What limbs do I need to cut off to disable this thing long enough to get it killed, right?
Right.
Similar thing. Use your face buttons and your controller. I don't know how you play this well with a keyboard and mouse. Just going to say that. So here's how it's working out, right? I'm aiming a gun at this killer android thing, right? It's coming at me. So I'm holding my left trigger, and then on my right trigger is my trigger, right? I've got my control pad to control what weapon or device I'm going to use in this combat sequence. And then my face buttons, my X, Y, X, B, right? All right, X, Y, A, B are the puzzle to solve. So a grid pops up when you aim at something, and you're moving the cursor using the face button. So, like, you know, the top face button is up, the right face button is right, the left face button. So like a cross pad, basically, right? You're moving through a sequence of nodes to hack it. And what that hack does is, as you get more abilities, basically, you get additional things that happen when it's hacked. So the basic one is it slows down and slightly disables it, right? And then if you complete the sequence correctly and hit like a certain node that you unlock, then you do extra damage. If you do another one, you can hack multiple things at once. So you always do extra damage when you hack them. But that's every time that you're in a combat encounter, you're doing that little hack mini game. And you do enough of those hacks, then you get like a super ability. It's a very video game, which I appreciate. It's a Capcom game, right? Like, Capcom, I feel like, has been doing pretty decent lately. So it doesn't take itself too seriously. It's got a lot of like weird, it's pretty Japanesey. I think that's the easiest way to say, right? And then it's got this weird, like, mini game you got to do while you're fighting. That's actually pretty fun, and it's pretty intuitive once you get to it. Like, I don't know that I've played anything quite like this. And the level design's pretty cool. It looks really good, too. Uses path tracing. You can max out all the pretties on your graphics card if you want to. It's pretty tunable. I did try playing it on Steam Deck, because I thought I've got to travel for work to El Paso for a week. And I was like, man, I want to take this with me. That's not going to happen. It does not run very good on Steam Deck unless they do more optimization passes. A solid 15 frames a second. It's just not playable. And FSR on this game on Steam Deck looks like hot trash. Just a smeary garbage mess. Not worth it. So that's not going to happen. But the overall game is pretty cool so far. I got it on Green Man I got the deluxe. They were all out of the standard version, but because I shop on Green Man fairly often, I got the deluxe version for less than the standard version on Steam. So standard version, I think, is $59.99. Deluxe edition is like $55 on Green Man. And had I gotten in there early enough, I'd have probably like $45. So, again, use Green Man for major releases. After a while, you just get pretty decent discounts all the time. You buy like 10 games and you get their best discount for life. So Pragmata, pretty damn good. Really quick game. Anybody here played Vampire Crawlers?
I saw it, and I think I have it downloaded.
Try the demo.
Well, it's on Game Pass.
Oh, is it on Game Pass?
Yeah.
Okay, well, opportunity missed.
Yeah. So yeah, I picked it up. I think I downloaded it on Game Pass right away. But I haven't had a chance to get around to it.
Okay.
I've heard it's worth it, because it's in the Vampire Survivors thing, but it's a card a card battler, right?
Mm-hmm. It's a card battler. And the music's every bit as slamming as it was before. In fact, my girlfriend had never played actual Vampire Survivors before. She played Vampire Crawlers with me, and she agreed that the chess music was something that she needed to have on repeat daily. She said it is the most funkadelic thing that she's heard in a video game ever. There are some nice slap bass every time you open those chests. It is. It's a crunch. It's got a pretty crunchy sounding soundtrack. Yeah. It's basically. It plays out. I'm trying to think. So, like, the evolution is the same in the like you had in the first game. But yeah, it's different. Like, you got to manage energy to play things, right? It's kind of like Slay the Spire. I don't know. It's just different. It's different enough, right? And it's same kind of general ideas, just in a card battler format. I don't know. It just works. If you have Game Pass, you'd actually get it. My dumbass is playing it without Game Pass, but that's fine. It's a really good game.
I just noticed that it was available there, and I was like, all right, cool. I'll go ahead and just pick that up then.
Yeah, I've got plenty to help me out, help me along while I'm on the plane. While I'm traveling, I've got Vampire Crawlers, the Mugenix, which I haven't talked about a lot, but I've made a lot of progress in Mugenix. Mugenix is a really fun game. And, of course, Slay the Spire, too. I don't know. I'm, like, really into these really short, not really short, like, really deep but low graphics games, but this is kind of my jam.
It's not bad. I know I should on the pixel art graphics games a long time ago, but I've kind of grown to them, grown to like them, because they're, I'll call myself out on this. I called them low effort games in the past, and I regret it, because it's an art style that, it is an art style, not necessarily like a way of cheaping out on games. So as I get older, and believe me, I'm part of the NES, SNES generation, I kind of miss having that retro style. I really miss the chiptunes. So anything that's, that flows like that, like Vampire Survivors and this new game probably fall right in that category of like, hey, it kind of looks like SNES and it has chiptune style music, right?
So yeah. Oh yeah, Vampire Crawlers is good.
So it's just one of those, one of those things. I can't fault you for liking these games, man. They're
it scratches so much. It scratches a very certain kind of thing,
Yeah, it's, and these days, it just seems like the innovation is coming from indies. It's all of the really interesting stuff is coming from the indie scene. Not much in the way of like innovation is coming from, your triple A's, and even to a point, the double A space is really kind of like still ho-hum, right? It's still safe, and they're drowning in their safety. So, yeah, more indie titles, man. Pick them up, because yeah, there's going to be really good games out there, and these are the ones that you're going to hear about, like your Death Stranding 2s and your freaking your Grand Theft Autos that's coming maybe someday, soon, or your Elder Scrolls that might come out before, you retire.
Yeah. I feel like I'm going to be old when that finally comes out. I'm going to be like, like Skyrim Grandma, but the grandpa version.
Right.
Same with Fallout. Be Fallout Father.
Fallout Granddaddy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's these are your goalpost games. Like these games are like tried true IPs that will sell no matter what, right? But they don't really do anything new. They just give you more of what you wanted from that game. everything that's come that's new, that's just like iterating on, you know, on or coming up with a completely different combination of gameplay mechanics is all, it's all on the indie scene. Shit, yeah, there's a game right now called Wreck Coin.
I tried that, and I can't quite figure out that game.
So, Wreck Coin, it's just a quick, you know, quick thing. It's a roguelike coin pusher game. Like, you know, those games you just drop a penny or a quarter or something like that, and it pushes the coins, you know, forward on a table, and the coins fall down into the, you know, into the front chute there, and you know, in the real world, you end up getting those coins. It's kind of like a form of gambling, but in this game, you get points for it. The first character and the first machine that you end up using has you get special coins that you can put down that do things to the value of the coins that's on the, you know, on the board. And that first character is about multiplying the value of the coins. So you want to do like things that cause the coins to get more and more valuable, and then use your special abilities to just kind of like grow that, so that there's, at one point I had one coin that was worth over a million points, and one of the on use things, you know, like one of the items that you can use will take that value and spread it to other coins around it, so that now I, instead of having just one coin that had a million point value, I now had like 30 coins that had million point value, and I only needed to drop one of them to end the round. So it was like you could do a lot of really cool stuff with this. It just takes playing through the game and seeing how, you know, how each one of the characters that you end up controlling works the machine.
How does a deaf dog know that I'm getting a delivery?
She can feel the vibrations in the ground like the sandworms in Dune. I don't know.
I just got an update that my delivery is about to hit. Jason, is your video just frozen?
I don't know, man.
Jason hasn't blinked in like 27 minutes. Just.
Oh, yeah, it was frozen.
Just staring it.
I'm just watching Jason like.
Your soul. Nice. But yeah, Red Coin's actually a really fun passive game. It plays on a potato. So
I've got it installed. I just haven't quite figured out how to make the coins interact.
It's the first character, you know, the manager or whatever is the character name. It doesn't tell you right away, but it is focused on getting as much value on a singular coin or a group of coins as possible, and then spreading that to other coins using prizes. And it's probably not the easiest, you know, not the easiest to get into, but once you actually get through all of the rounds with it, it will unlock a bunch of other stuff.
I'm just going to watch somebody play it so I can figure out what I'm doing wrong.
Watching somebody play it really doesn't help you. I noticed that. Somebody that can describe what each one of the coins does, that could help.
I just don't understand what I'm doing. Like, I'm just like dropping coins out, right? And then what is that doing?
So you have your normal coins, like your normal copper coins.
Right. So you load so many of those, right? And then are they stacking up to a point where they're going to dump over into the tray? And am I trying to arrange things in the tray so that it dumps strategically to push it off, or like, that's what I don't get.
So the copper coins, your standard coins, are there to push, you know, are mainly just for pushing. They have a value of one, as base. So they're really not worth anything. They have, you know, because they count as a coin, they do count as part of the mechanic that does the like the prize spinner. So the more of those coins you drop at one time, the more powerful your coin, you know, your prize spinner will be. But really, what you want to do is use flip expansions, which is where you store your special coins, and then get the right special coins that interact with each other. You use the special coins to raise the value of all of the coins that is around it, and you use the copper coins to push those off the off the edge so that you can get the coin values out of them. That's what gets you to the next round. And then when you get to the next round, or get to the point where you've got all of the points for that round, you can either dump all of your copper coins onto the onto the game board and then hit the next round, or just go directly into the next round. You lose those coins. But if you dump them on the pusher and then immediately go to the next round, you can actually start the next round with a neat, head start. It'll kind of push those coins forward, and the point values will apply to the next round. So there's different ways to go about it. You just kind of have to do the roguelike thing and experiment with different coin combos and different techniques as to how you want to spread your normal copper coins out so that you can get the most out of them. It's interesting for a couple different reasons. I wanted something that was a little more passive but could have some strategy to it, and there is something to be said about coin pushers. It's just kind of like a pachinko machine. It's like you have a sound associated with, like, I don't want to say that it's a sound that's associated with with like a slot machine, but it kind of is. It's weird, you know.
I gotcha.
It's because it's not gambling. I mean, we don't want to get another Bellatro situation going on here, right? But it's something that is relatively unique in the space. I haven't seen very many coin pusher games, right? There's a couple of them. They're crap. This is, by far the best one. And it's worth, it's worth a shot. I think it's like, what, $15? Something like that? I saw it, during one of the indie showcases. I saw it, saw it on Steam, and I'm like, oh yeah, I gotta give that that'll go. $12. After $12, easy. Pick this up. Worth. And I think it's made by the same, or no, it's published by the same publisher that's Latro, Clover Pit, and Slay the Spire. Is it published by the same people?
Is it Critical Hit or something like that?
PlayStack. Let's see. I'm looking. Let's see. Voidbreaker, Abiotic Factor, Balatro, Last Faith, Mortal Shell. Okay, so there's some, you know, man, there's some relatively, you know, I guess, top sellers. All. So they've had some stinkers in there, but they've also got some pretty good ones, right? So,
I mean, that tracks for most companies, right? Unless you're right. Ubisoft, like, it's just been mostly trash for a while.
Golden Idol Investigations, I've never heard of, but yeah, whatever. The Entropy Center. Let's see. It's The Last Faith.
That game's pretty decent, sure too.
Yeah. That was one of the ones that you played. It was Metroidvania Souls-like.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So there's, they've got some, some of those in there, and they do kind of lean heavy on the pixel art graphics, and that's another one of those things that Reckoin has. Is it's got the pixel art style. So it's worth picking up, especially for $12. So I've had fun with it. It is one of those games where you just kind of like play you can play through a set of rounds and just be done with it. You don't have to continue playing. It's like not something you binge like you would for Crimson Desert or anything like that. It is just good fun for short periods. Yeah. I don't know. Is there anything else that we want to talk about? Because I've got some plants that are calling my name right now.
Yeah. I think we're
really
good.
Weird to think about.
I think we'll reconvene a little bit more regularly here for a while, because hopefully nothing else disastrous happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's all dependent on life.
It's there is going to be a period of time here. Like Mother's Day weekend is coming up. And for me, that is a big weekend. Cause not only is it Mother's Day, but it's also, I work in the community, during that weekend. And, that's also the time where my little town has its festival, up here. The little villages and little towns have festivals that are like their harvest festivals, you know? My little town is known for its morel mushrooms. So.
Oh, yeah, the mushrooms.
The mushroom festival is that weekend, so I will be not available that entire weekend, which is Mother's Day weekend, so a couple weeks from now. But. We got some time, between now and then. Anywho.
All right, y'all.
Jason.
Where can you find us?
Find us at tiltcast.com. Find us on Facebook and twitter.com or x.com/tiltcast. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/tiltcastshorts with a Z. And search for us on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe.
Find friends of the show. You've got... For the Love of Gaming, you've got Picking Up the Pixels or the Pubcast or TVGP.TV. They've been doing this longer than we have. And with that, it's the end of the show.
All right.
Peace.